morning, and thank you.
This call is being recorded.
Good morning, and thank you for joining Repro Action's press conference focused on the logical consequence of anti-abortion activity in the Commonwealth of Virginia, which is using lies, harassment, and the law to intimidate and incarcerate women and people who can become pregnant. A bit of housekeeping. This is being recorded, and copies of the recording can be obtained by contacting the contact on the press release. We'll have three speakers with brief remarks, starting with myself, and then we'll unmute the line for questions. My name is Erin Mattson, and I'm co-founder and co-director of Repro Action. We are a national group formed to increase access to abortion and advance reproductive justice. I am proud to live and work in Virginia, where, frankly, we've got multiple deep problems. Repro Action has launched a Stop Prosecuting Abortion campaign with the release of our first two videos asking abortion opponents simple, important, and disturbing questions about the America they seek. All current and future videos are available on our website at reproaction.org. Our first video was taken at a protest held by Operation Save America, an extreme national anti-abortion group that has met with government officials, including Kentucky Governor Matt Bevin. We asked these protesters and anti-abortion leaders if women should go to jail for having abortions. Some told us women should go to jail. Others told us abortion was a crime. And chillingly, some told us women should be executed for having abortions. Our second video includes remarks from a number of anti-abortion leaders and activists, including Father Stephen Imbarato, a leader with the national anti-abortion group Priests for Life, who has previously been arrested and given a suspended fine for trespassing in the Alexandria Women's Health Clinic after interfering with patients in the waiting room and refusing to leave. Anti-abortion blogs claim that he participated in multiple similar actions following that, additionally asserting that he served 7 days in jail for similarly obstructing patients' access to abortion in Washington, D.C. Imbarato was candid with us, arguing his view that abortion should be made illegal. In response to a question about women self-managing their own abortions and punishment for that, he said, quote, "That's going to be deemed all right by the justice system, case-on-case basis," unquote. Unfortunately, that scenario is neither a hypothetical nor a handmaid's tale. It is already happening in Virginia, even while Roe v. Wade is still the law of the land. In October 2018, Chesterfield County prosecutors dropped felony charges against a woman named Michelle Roberts for ending her own pregnancy. And to be clear, anti-abortion zealotry has always led to suspicion and punishment for a variety of pregnancy outcomes, including miscarriages, and other things that have nothing to do with abortion, as in the case of Catherine Dellis, who was convicted in Virginia after experiencing a stillbirth at home. Governor Ralph Northam pardoned her just last year. These two prosecutions and interactions with the criminal justice system never should have happened. Make no mistake, it is a gross infringement of human rights to incarcerate people because of their own pregnancy or abortion, and Virginia is a ground zero in this national fight. Repro Action is launching our Stop Prosecuting Abortion campaign so that people can see what abortion opponents have to say about prosecuting abortion in their own words. We are also calling attention to the pitiful state of abortion access today and rampant pro-life harassment occurring against abortion providers, people who have abortions, and policymakers who support them, including our own delegate Kathy Tran, who has been widely distorted and mocked by a so-called pro-life community that has issued threats against her and a number of Virginia policymakers and advocates in recent weeks. Finally, we are demanding an end to prosecutions for self-managed abortion and indeed all aspects of pregnancy, prosecutions that are already happening in the United States, even before a 5-seat anti-abortion majority on the Supreme Court overturns or guts Roe versus Wade. We are keenly aware that abortion opponents from all over the country have put a laser focus on Virginia in order to end access to in-clinic abortion and demonize people who have abortions, and we're standing up to say, not on our watch. Now, I'm pleased to introduce our two speakers. We'll start with Tarina Keene, Tarina is Executive Director of NARAL Pro-Choice Virginia, the political and policy leader for the pro-choice movement in Virginia. Thank you for joining us, Tarina.
Thank you for having me. I'm going to talk a little bit about what's been happening in Virginia for the last couple of weeks around abortion. On Monday, January 28th, Delegate Kathy Tran, a freshman member of the House of Delegates, was preparing to present HB 2491, known as the Repeal Act. This was the third year that the Virginia Pro-Choice Coalition had advocated for the bill. That morning, Delegate Todd Gilbert, who was the chair of the House Courts of Justice Subcommittee Number 4, and also the House Majority Leader, made an unusual announcement. He told those in the audience that the abortion bills would be heard first that day, and it would only take about an hour to an hour and a half to hear the two bills being presented. That's when I knew immediately that something was about to happen. For the last few years, reproductive rights bills have been buried in committee without a peep. And this same exact bill had never been scrutinized or had gained any media attention. Anti-abortion legislators have not wanted to vote on repro bills for the last few years because they know that the majority of Virginians support reproductive rights. However, on this day, when Gilbert said this, we immediately became concerned. We also noticed a professional video camera pointing at the podium and more anti-abortion advocates in the room than normal. Nothing could have prepared us for what was about to transpire. Delegate Gilbert and Delegate Rob Bell, two seasoned politicians and prosecutors, ambushed Delegate Tran with a ridiculous and revolting line of questioning with the intent of intimidating, confusing, and entrapping her. After relentlessly peppering her for several minutes, they finally got the small soundbite they were looking for, which they twisted and mangled into a series of inflammatory, outlandish lies and accusations to paint a false, medically inaccurate picture, to deceive the public and twist the facts regarding abortion later in pregnancy. So let's talk about what the Repeal Act really does. It reverses TRAP, targeted regulations on abortion providers that are designed to shut down women's health centers and shut off patients' access to abortion. It repeals the 24-hour mandatory waiting period. Third, it overturns the mandatory ultrasound law, an additional 24-hour waiting period. You all probably remember the infamous fight over the transvaginal ultrasounds from a few years back. Virginians really hate this law. Four, it eliminates the requirement that a second trimester abortion be performed in a hospital, as well as eliminates the requirement that two additional doctors sign off on a third trimester abortion. When it comes to 1% of these circumstances that involve later abortions and are exclusively due to complex, tragic circumstances when a woman's health or life is in danger or the pregnancy is no longer viable. It's a pretty cut and dry bill that repeals medically unnecessary, politically motivated restrictions and barriers to abortion and takes politicians out of the decision-making process and puts it back in the hands of patients and their doctors. Delegate Gilbert and abortion proponents are using dangerous tropes that actually can put a patient's health and life in jeopardy. They're spreading lies and medically inaccurate information about later abortion, and it is reprehensible and purely political. Here in Virginia, the majority party is desperate to remain in power, and their desperation is playing out in the form of orchestrating a vile misinformation campaign that has led to death threats against pro-choice members of the House of Delegates. Delegate Kathy Tran is a mother of four who even nursed her nine-month-old baby on the floor of the house just last year and carried her on her hip throughout the eight-week session in 2017. When the Virginia Republican Party released the now notorious video of Delegate Tran, she immediately started receiving death threats and had to have police protection. Other Virginia delegates that signed on to the bill, or who are just simply pro-choice, also received the same sort of vicious treatment. The people who hatched this outlandish idea knew that they were instigating a dangerous backlash that could spur hate and violence, yet they did it anyway. They are trying to intimidate pro-choice legislators and deceive Virginians during this important election year. They should be ashamed of themselves, but pro-choice advocates are definitely not intimidated. We are more determined than ever to stand up for our values and our principles and ensure women and families are always able to make medical decisions that are best for them and free from political interference or harassment. Thank you so much.
Thank you, Tarina. Now I'm pleased to introduce Sharon Kahn, who is the Abortion Rights and Reproductive Health Program Director for Media Matters for America, which monitors, analyzes, and corrects conservative misinformation in U.S. media. Thank you for joining us, Sharon.
Thank you so much for having me. As you sort of already mentioned, Media Matters' role is to monitor and correct conservative misinformation no matter where it shows up, and in particular, the work of my team is to monitor conservative misinformation about abortion to ensure that media outlets are equipped to have a frank, fair, and factual discussion about the topic. This has kept my team particularly busy over the past few weeks as we've watched anti-choice misinformation spread from sensationalized segments on Fox News all the way to the State of the Union address. Now, thanks to the diligent work of my colleagues, it's no secret that Trump takes his cues from Fox News for everything from talking points to staffing decisions, and even policy proposals. And what we saw with the anti-abortion misinformation in the State of the Union was no different. It came after weeks of sensationalized, inaccurate, and stigmatizing coverage about Virginia and, to a lesser extent, New York's abortion measures on Fox News. During the State of the Union, Trump used sensationalized language to inaccurately describe abortion, using multiple talking points that had dominated Fox News programming for weeks before. Not only was his description of abortion in general a misinformation with no basis in medical or scientific reality, it was a lie that had been repeatedly airing on the president's favorite TV show for weeks before. Trump also used terminology like, quote, late-term abortion, which is a term that we know is inaccurate and in fact was invented by anti-abortion activists to villainize and shame people who have abortions later in pregnancy, and in fact dominates right-wing media spheres about this conversation. In reality, we know that people who have abortions, including abortions later in pregnancy, are making a personal healthcare decision that's between them, their doctor, and their families, something that has not been represented in right-wing media coverage, and in particular, Fox News' coverage of the topic. Trump also called in the State of the Union for legislation that would, quote, prohibit late-term abortion of children who can feel pain. Right-wing media, for years, and anti-choice politicians have repeatedly pushed for such a ban around 20 weeks. And we know that in doing so, they've manipulated this concept of fetal pain to spread medically inaccurate information in support of these restrictions. Restrictions which people who've had abortions at or after 20 weeks report do far more harm than good. At Media Matters, we weren't surprised to see any of this clear misinformation appear in the State of the Union. And even casual watchers of Trump's media consumption probably wouldn't have been surprised either. In fact, in the lead up to the address, we observed a spike in Fox News' coverage of New York's law and to an even greater extent, Virginia's abortion measure and the resulting conversations. Years of studying Fox's abortion-related coverage have taught us that the network is often the loudest and least accurate voice on cable when it comes to abortion conversations. Last Friday, we released a study that quantified this coverage spike. We found that before the State of the Union, Fox News spent over 6.5 hours fear-mongering and spreading inaccurate information about abortion access in Virginia. Between January 24th and noon on January 31st alone, so encompassing conversations about both New York and Virginia, Fox News repeated the word infanticide in its coverage, which is inaccurate and highly sensationalized, at least 35 times. We documented various examples of this misinformation, many of which turned up in the State of the Union, and the underlying fact is still the same. The characterizations that are pervading in right-wing media and that are showing up now at Trump's rallies and speeches are all false and sensationalized. And as other speakers have gestured to, all of these are examples of the kind of rhetoric that stokes harassment and violence against abortion providers, patients, clinics, and in some cases representatives advocating for their right to access necessary health care. A trend that we saw with former Fox News host Bill O'Reilly's treatment of Dr. Tiller, and a trend that we saw with the sensationalized coverage around the rhetoric from the deceptive videos from the Center for Medical Progress. Fox News' sensationalized coverage and Trump's parroting of it isn't going to stop. Already, there are reports that Trump is planning on making this kind of inaccurate messaging a hallmark of his 2020 strategy, something we've already seen in his first post-State of the Union campaign rally, which repeated rhetoric from Fox News and exaggerated it further. We know this kind of rhetoric has consequences. We're already seeing it. And that's why media outside of the right-wing media echo chamber have a responsibility not only to call out this misinformation when they see it, but also not to fall into the trap of uncritically repeating Fox News' or conservative media's anti-abortion talking points and inaccurate language. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon, and thank you to both Sharon and Tarina for your illuminating and powerful remarks. Now I'm asking the operator to unmute the line for any questions. My request is that you please state your name and affiliation before asking your question.
So, excuse me. Hi. So this is Cindy Wolf-Boynton from Ms. Magazine. Hello. Thank you so much for doing this today. Can you tell me, do you think that it's more than Trump's rhetoric that's causing a spike in action on both the pro and the anti-choice sides?
That's a great question, and I would first like to pass that over to Sharon.
Yeah, thank you so much for that question. I think that obviously it's very complicated to discern causality. I think that we've seen, and I can speak from the perspective of media analysis in this case. I think both Aaron and Tarina can speak better to sort of what they're seeing on the ground. From our perspective, we've seen across sort of the right-wing media spectrum a spike in language that is kind of extreme when talking about abortion. And I think we have a couple of pieces on our website that point to sort of this spike in trends, whether it's the language that's being used to describe people who have abortions or even the sort of language that's being used to describe what permissible in their minds forms of abortion are. We're seeing a sort of change in the tenor, and we're seeing an increased frequency at which these conversations are happening. And I think all of that probably plays in to some extent as well.
Tarina, is there anything you'd like to add?
No, I totally agree with what you're saying. Sorry.
No worries. Thank you. Yes, I will just say that at Repro Action, two additional things that I'll note. I recently wrote a piece for Rewire, a daily publication focused on reproductive and sexual health rights and justice, talking about the deep crises, the multiple crises that are occurring in Virginia at the same time. And one of the things I laid out that in that piece is how the Commonwealth of Virginia is currently in the middle of a anti-abortion hit job, which is something that Tarina referenced and laid out in her remarks, including the fact that there were professional cameras just waiting to try to catch Delegate Kathy Tran and to distort her. So I do think that this is part of a broader campaign that is bigger than Donald Trump, but there is no question that Donald Trump is both a cheerleader for punishing women who have abortions. That's something he said to Chris Matthews when he was a candidate, and that also that he has inflamed rhetoric on a variety of issues. I do think it's important to note, however, that it doesn't just sit with him. He said that he wanted to punish women who have abortions, what we have found in our video series that we have begun to release is that abortion opponents, there are a wide number of them, who do agree with incarcerating women who have abortions, a trend that is already happening in the United States. The SIA legal team has documented at least 21 cases of women who have been criminally charged or had interactions with the criminal justice system for attempting to end their own pregnancies. And so it's important to keep an eye on that as we consider that major pro-life groups such as the Susan B. Anthony List have cheerled and said that Donald Trump is the most, quote, pro-life president in history, unquote. Thank you. Are there further questions? Oh, yes, please.
Can I just, this is Cindy again, I just want to follow up on that. So part of something that I wonder about is that, you know, if we are, so those on the pro-choice side, we are so worried, and we are so vocally worried, you know, that then sparks a worry in me. And I wonder sometimes is our fear that's causing us to speak out so loudly about, you know, why we can't go back in any way. If that might in some way be encouraging, you know, the anti-choice side to get riled up. If we're riled up, we're causing them to get riled up. It's like this, which then makes us even more riled up. You know, I just wonder sometimes if playing it cool might be helpful. And I'm just wondering, you know, what your response might be to that.
That's a great question. I do think that, number one, that they are, that the anti-abortion opponents have always been loud and vocal and determined and willing to use any means possible to try to restrict people's access to reproductive health care and to control people's bodily autonomy. They have used violence. They have used bombings. They have used actual assassinations. They have called for imprisonment of people who have abortions. Kevin Williamson, a columnist, called for hanging people who have abortions. And so it's only a very recent thing in, that we've seen more intensity coming up on the side of people who support abortion rights, which has for a long time been it's a solid majority in this country. And in fact, a new poll from Perry Undum shows what they say is the highest support for abortion rights that they've seen in years of studying the topic. So people do not want to see Roe v. Wade overturned. And I do think that abortion opponents as from ReproAction's lens, where we spend a good bit of our efforts monitoring abortion opponents as well, that it's clear that they have been deeply rattled by the success of the Reproductive Health Act in New York and the fact that there are other states, including Rhode Island, considering proactive measures, and of course Virginia, and that they absolutely are trying to tamp down. But I do want to say clearly and unequivocally that their problems are their fault. And it's the vast majority of Americans support reproductive rights in this country and profoundly disagree with their agenda. And so their violent rhetoric is on them.
Okay, and this is you. Karina, if I could just piggyback off of what you were saying, Erin, I think they're using Virginia as a testing ground for 2020. You know, they've been trying to stay away from this issue for a while. They see the light at the end of their tunnel that Roe will be overturned in the next, you know, 2 to 3 years. And I think that they are trying to amp up the rhetoric and the misinformation because they can't win on their particular set of values. And they do know that the majority of Virginians, the majority of Americans do support Roe. They do support reproductive rights and people being able to make their own medical decisions free from political interference. So this is, you know, like I said before, this is what happened recently here in the Commonwealth was completely, you know, out of left field, and they're trying to just throw everything in the kitchen sink at us to see what will stick, to heighten intimidation, and to prevent states from actually moving forward. That's what they've been saying for a while now, is that, oh, if they overturn Roe, it'll just go back to the states. But we know the vast majority of the states are not in a situation where they're going to advance reproductive rights, at least half of them. Some might not make any further moves, but others could move to ban abortion outright. Virginia's in a different situation. You know, we're on a trajectory to actually increase access to advance reproductive rights and freedom agenda. And that is very scary to the folks who have been working for decades here to undermine women's health and rights in the Commonwealth. So, you know, this is all happening for a reason at this particular moment, and we need to stay focused and understand that we are on the right side of history, and that, you know, we need to stand up for our values and principles in the face of this type of vile rhetoric and intimidation.
Thank you. Are there any additional questions? All right. Hearing no further questions, I want to thank you for attending our press conference, and a special thanks to both Tarina and Sharon for joining us. Please be sure to follow the work of NARAL Pro-Choice Virginia and Media Matters for America. From Repro Action's end, we will continue to release additional videos in coming weeks, and we redouble our commitment to direct action and physical demonstration to hold the pro-life movement accountable for its lies, harassment, and callous commitment to throwing women in jail. No matter what they do to the laws, we will work around the clock to ensure people get access to the information and care they need. There is a grassroots base of support to overturn unjust laws that criminalize self-managed abortion, and we are building more power to make that a reality and to increase access to abortion in the United States writ large. We will never stop fighting. Thank you so much, and have a great day. Goodbye.